From the studios of WXXI, this is Backstage Pass. I'm Julia Figueres. November is American Music Month, so we're getting into the spirit with an all-American show. Meet 5x5, a chamber group with an unusual musical lineup and the mission to seek out and perform music of our time. You'll find them in all kinds of places, from classrooms to dance stages to the Memorial Art Gallery, and today, you'll find them in our studios. Embracing new American music next on WXXI. Welcome to Backstage Pass. I'm Julia Figueres. A pleasure to have you here today and a pleasure to have a really interesting group in our studio today, 5x5. So let me introduce you to these wonderful people and their interesting instruments. Our flutist is Laura Lentz. Say hello, Laura.
Hello, everybody.
Marcy Bacon is our clarinetist.
Good afternoon.
Playing the piano is Hae Young Jun.
Hi.
We have guitarist, and that's electric guitarist.
Electric guitar, yes.
Sungmin Shin.
Hello.
Discretion here, we must say you were once my intern
yes.
here at WXXI. Now look at you, you're a professor of music. And wrapping up the group, double bassist and composer Eric Polinick.
Hello.
And I know that some of you have been here before, and it's nice to have all the rest of you here as a group. So let's start at the very beginning. How did 5x5 get started?
Well, very good question. So it actually originally, I think, started with Eric and Laura together meeting up and wanting to play some music together, and then kind of like a web of connections, you know, the music world. It's a kind of a tight-knit community, and I knew Eric pretty well, and I know Han pretty well because she's my wife.
I hope you know her well.
And then it all kind of came together, and then I think we all kind of knew Marcy. I think Eric maybe knew Marcy the best from playing together in a few different pickup orchestra type situations, and it's now actually I think our fourth year this year together. Yeah.
So what was it, Laura, what was it that you wanted to accomplish? When you started talking to Eric, what was that conversation?
Well, I had just returned from Detroit, and I heard Missy Mazzoli and her group Victoire, and I was fascinated by her music. And I started listening to some of her music. I reached out to Eric. We kind of found each other, and then it went on from there and discovered more wonderful composers that we wanted to tap into. And then now we're commissioning works. We're doing our own arrangements. We're really doing a lot of wonderful things in these 4 years.
Well, it seems to me with this musical lineup, Eric, you would need to do your own arrangements because I'm not quite convinced that there is another group like this anywhere in the world.
Yeah, we're pretty unique. When Laura contacted me, I told her, I'm like, yeah, I love this music. Rochester has to hear this music. And I also needed another chamber group project at the time. And so I told her, I'll do it, but let's make this a long-term project. And I didn't really know what I was getting myself into because the very reason, we need lots of music for this instrumentation. So it's perfect. Our mission is to create music and get people doing chamber music. And how else to create it by coming up with an instrumentation that isn't out there?
Anywhere to be found. So how do you find music, Marcy, for this bizarre and charming instrumentation?
Well, truth be told, there is another group forging this path ahead of us. And they are, I'm not sure how active they are anymore, but they have put out a few CDs and they were out of New York City. So we are playing, actually nothing on today's program is from them, but some of our previous pieces have come from some repertoire that they started.
So we will hear an all-American show during this American Music Month today. And we begin with Julia Seeholzer and her piece, Constant. This is 5x5 on Backstage Pass. A lovely trance-like piece by Julia Seeholzer, Constant, played by 5x5 on Backstage Pass. Really pretty piece, Eric.
Oh, it's absolutely gorgeous. While we're playing, I just can't help but having a vision of like running through a field full of flowers, just chasing after each other. And that's kind of what we do in this piece. There's only 10 musical phrases, and we all share the same 10 musical phrases, and Marcy starts off playing it, and then Sung follows, I follow Sung, and Laura brings up the end, and we all just chase each other with it.
And you have piano in there, don't
and
forget.
And we do have piano, too. She holds us together.
So how did you find this piece of music?
We did a call for scores last year. It was our first time doing it. We basically sent out emails, posted wherever we could, and said, hey, we're a new ensemble. This is our instrumentation. Send us your music. We want to discover new composers. We want to see what you're up to. And Julia Seeholzer was a wonderful person who sent us a piece that was very similar to this. And she goes, I think this could really work for your ensemble. Can I arrange it for you? And we, of course, said yes. And we had probably, how many submissions did we have, Laura?
I think it was 70.
70 submissions.
From around the world, yeah.
Yeah, and we only had so many spots at our Nice Boots concert last year. And this was one of the ones to get it. And we fell in love with it.
How do you know, Sung, what makes the cut and what doesn't cut make the cut?
That's a very good question.
You get 70 pieces, now what?
Yes. Well, so we should also mention, though, I think of the 70 submissions, not all of them were specifically for our instrumentation. There were some of them were actually open-ended instrumentation. There were a few that were specifically for our instrumentation. But ultimately, we were looking for, I think, a musical language that we like and what we gravitate towards. That was the most important thing. And then we have to also kind of look at the feasibility of, hey, can we actually play this music? Can we put it together? And in the process of discussion and listening through things, if there were audio examples, and narrowing it down.
So what do you like? What do you gravitate toward when you are looking at music, Laura?
It has to sit well for the five instruments. I think the blend and the colors, the different things the piece has to offer. It also depends on what we're thinking programming-wise. Sometimes we're also looking for something that we don't have. Like, for example, Simon Hutchinson's Zephyr. We chose his piece as a runner-up in our call for scores last year. And it involves the flute playing into the piano. It involves otherworldly sounds that I don't think that we've touched on as a group. And so that's a piece that spoke to us just because, okay, this is completely something different. There's another piece by Nicole Murphy that we've been listening to. She's a composer out of Australia. Again, listening to a work that she can arrange for us, thinking this is something we don't have. And so we're looking for new sounds that we can share with our audiences.
We have a couple of more established composers that will make appearances during Backstage Pass today, but this is not one of them. This is a piece called Night Dance, and it is written by Jonathan Russell. We are listening to 5x5, and this is Backstage Pass, live from the Henry Epstein Studio at WXXI.
Thank you.
Night Dance. Jonathan Russell wrote it, and 5x5 played it. I'm Julia Figueres. This is Backstage Pass. Night Dance, interesting piece, has a very improvisational feel to it. And in fact, some of the things that you have played, like a piece called Hacky Sack, really requires improvisation. So let's start with Marcy and Eric. You are our really hardcore classical folks. You play in you're in the RPO, and Marcy, I know that you play in like the Lyric and the Rochester Oratorio Society orchestras. How does one bust out of that classical box, and Marcy, and improv?
Well, for me, it was easy because I played by ear as a youth, not necessarily making up my own music, but I was always playing my clarinet with the radio. And I played it with Mozart, and I played it with Duran Duran, and I really got that association between my ears and my fingers. And so it's comfortable for me to play without notation, to a degree.
Wait, what's your favorite Duran Duran song?
Secret October. It's the B-side of something that came out.
Yeah, good choice. Anyway, so you play by ear to start with. Now, Eric, you have an instrument which lends itself to improvisation by the nature of the double bass and jazz. But how did you kind of get through that classical box?
I think it was basically putting myself with these guys, and they're so much more comfortable at it than I was. And I'm just like, well, I got to keep up. So I'm just going to dive in and do it. And that is the thing with bass. A lot of people, because I'm a classical musician, mostly do classical. I do a little bit of jazz, but I think people always have a higher expectation of what my improv skills are. And so this was the perfect opportunity to kind of take that and play with others who had a little bit more experience, and just put yourself out there. What I really like what we're doing is we're taking it kind of from that classical standpoint. That's where we're coming from as improvisers. We're not coming from knowing all of this jazz harmonies. I mean, we all know a little bit, but that's not our main field of study. And so coming out to where a piece where it says, you know, here's four bars that are totally blank, and then you have to make this up, and it's just four bars within the last little piece we do. But it's a nice little way for us to get used to it little by little. For Hacky Sack, we actually hired Mark to write us a piece. And we told Mark, like, look, we want to have a piece that's an educational piece. We all want to improvise and get used to passing around solos. None of us have really done that too much. And Mark wrote us a piece where we do exactly that. And so when we perform that piece, we have no idea who's getting the next solo.
Brutal.
It is, yes.
So, Sungmin, you're a professor. Can you teach improv?
I do, actually. I do have, I grew up playing a lot of jazz, more so rock and blues, and then I got into jazz around high school when I started getting more into classical music, and I did a lot of playing by ear, kind of like what Marcy said, too, and throughout college and grad school, I kind of, on my own, did a lot of studying of jazz in particular, and actually took classes and workshops and things like that. So I do teach it quite a bit on my own.
And is jazz, are kids interested in learning jazz?
I think it depends, you know, but teaching jazz can mean a lot of different things, I think. Just like how classical music can also mean a lot of different things. So if we're, you could say, a classical group. We're playing today on a classical radio program, but I think we're not really what you would think of normally as classical music. So I think it's similar to jazz, too, I think. There's, you know, in an educational setting, you can have kind of a bit more of a conservative, like old-school big band jazz way of approaching things, or maybe something more modern and contemporary. And it can go many different directions, I think.
I think I wanted to say, when we are working in the schools and we're working with kids, our approach is not, is it classical, is it jazz, it's improvisation, and what can you do on your instrument? How can you be creative? How can you use your instrument in a new way, maybe that you've never done before? You know, can you, like, key clicks, or what can you explore in your instrument? And so all that is also of interest to us, to spark kids in our educational work that we do.
So ultimately, making sound is more important than structuring music, Sung?
Yeah, I think so. And going back to actually your question about, are kids interested in learning jazz? I think typically jazz musicians, the most important thing is obviously improvisation. And So if there's improvisation in your music, you can put it under the jazz category, I think, in various ways. And ultimately, I think we found last year when we were working with students, doesn't matter if it has to sound like jazz, but if there's improvisation involved, it really frees things up and opens them up, I think. And for us, too, it really opens us up for new opportunities. And you have to be really comfortable to improvise, right?
Right. So let's listen to a couple of, first of two fairly established composers, folks that we have heard of on this backstage pass. And the first one is actually arranged by Eric Palenik, our double bassist, and is a piece by Meredith Monk called Parlor Games. This is Classical 91.5. Thank you. Parlor Games, that's by Meredith Monk, arranged by Eric Polenik, played by 5x5 on Backstage Pass. Eric, what did Parlor Games look like before you got your hands on it?
It was a piano duet. So, yeah, it's written for two pianos, and Laura, I think, was the one person that talked me into or turned me onto it, and I went and got the recording, and I really liked it, and there were especially two movements that I really liked from that recording. It was Parlor Games and Phantom Waltz, and I went out and bought the sheet music and said, I think I can arrange this for 5x5, and so we started the process of doing it.
And you did a great job,
Thank
too.
You.
Now, this, Meredith Monk, is part of a collaboration that you are doing with Biodance, or
yes.
Is it the one that's coming up or the one that you already did?
Actually, it had a little bit of both. We did Parlor Games and Phantom Waltz with Biodance at the Fringe Festival, and then we're going to do another performance at the VSW in first week of December. It's the first Friday in December.
December 7th. Yeah.
So there is a challenge, I understand, when you're working with Biodance, when you're working with dancers, of trying to collaborate, to sort of connect that music, of the movement on the stage, the music that you're playing, and it's always a little different. So how do you kind of put that together, Marcy?
We keep rehearsing and we fine-tune the tempos, and we have provisional plans in place in case we find that there's too much music for the dance or too much dance for the music. We have safety nets so that we can try to end together as much as possible. I love the spirit of that collaboration and the energy that the dancers bring to the music.
It seems to me, Laura, that it's hard enough to sort of have your circle and play together in your circle, but then you have to start eyeballing outside of your circle as well.
Oh, yeah. I mean, we, in terms of collaborations and, you know, working with various artists, poets, dancers, visual artists, we are always seeking out new collaborators to help us realize the music in a different way.
So let's talk about these collaborations, because you've done some and you've got some more coming up. How do you go about Sungmin looking at these projects, shaping the projects, identifying groups that you want to work with?
Well, that's a very good question. So we should first maybe mention the upcoming projects. We already mentioned the VSW Visual Studies Workshop, which we're collaborating with Biodance, but also visual artist Josh Thorson. And then in the spring, we have an educational collaboration with Strings for Success, which is really going to be an exciting project.
Which we will talk about imminently.
Okay.
Yeah, this will come up as will your mag thing that you've got coming too.
So,
but how do you specifically say, this is a group with which I need to work?
Well, I think we all have different connections within the community, and I think we're trying to tap into that more. We all have different backgrounds, and I think just connecting with people within the community, whether it's just music or outside of music, that's been really important to us. And we've been finding that the more we connect with people, especially outside of music, and with this specifically our most recent Fringe project with Biodance, it's been very helpful for us for building an audience and reaching new people. And as far as finding them, I think we're all fairly open, and we'd like to branch out to new ideas. So I think it boils down to who's interesting and who do we want to work with, I guess.
You've actually gone beyond just doing a strict collaboration on the stage. You've brought in outside businesses to show up and work at your concerts as well, Marcy.
That's true. We had a concert last spring where, since the theme was nice boots, I'm not sure how that got started. Oh, I think I remember. I think we had a little birdie between our group and a local...
The Op Shop.
The Op Shop. It's a vintage clothing store. And so they did a pop-up shop at our concert. And then a boot salesman heard us on the radio, promoted by you, and said, maybe there's a collaboration, and we let him come too. And this coming spring, we have Sinful Sweets coming to bring cupcakes to our spring concert called Sweet Air.
So this is very nice, because somebody can come to your concert and walk away well-heeled and, you know, have great music to have experienced as well. Well-dressed and well-educated and to boot. Our guests today are 5x5, and we listened to the second known commodity, as we were, of composers. This is a Philip Glass piece called Metamorphosis, again arranged by Eric Polenik, and 5x5 plays on Backstage Pass. Metamorphosis. Philip Glass wrote it, Eric Polenik arranged it, and it was played for us by 5x5 on Backstage Pass. An upcoming event, speaking of Glass, is Glassworks. This is a project that is part of the MAGB tour, and you will be involved in, well, explain this to us, Eric.
Yeah, so we really liked this Glass artist, Judas Schechter, and we decided that we were so blown away with it, we wanted to come up with an idea of, like, how do we get music written about this piece? It just seems like the perfect piece. It's called The Battle of Carnival and Lent, and it's hanging at the MAG right now. And we had this idea that let's get a couple composers and let's have them all write one piece of, well, actually each of them write a piece of music about the same work of art and find out what are the differences, what are the similarities, what is each composer's take. And so we brought this to the MAG, and they were on board with it and go for it. And we wrote up a grant. We submitted through New Music USA, and we were very fortunate enough to win it. And so the project is underway, and we're so excited. We cannot wait for the pieces to start arriving. It's not until like the end of next summer we get them, but we're biting.
So who did you manage to find, Alora, for writing the pieces, these four pieces?
The four composers. John Russell, who composed Night Dance for us. I went to a concert at Eastman and heard the Eastman Wind Ensemble, and they premiered a work of his, and I fell in love with his music. So we reached out to him. Andrea Mazzariello, who won McKnight Composer Fellowship a couple years ago, wrote a beautiful piece that we played called Trust Fall. We played it on live from Hochstein a couple years ago. Edie Hill, who is a friend of Sung's and a wonderful composer based in Minnesota, along with Mazzariello. And the last one is Jung-sun Kang, who finished her doctorate at Eastman. And, you know, wanting to support also emerging composers. And so we have really, we're looking forward to hearing the four different voices and the four approaches to composing for this one piece of artwork.
This is money. Let's talk money. This stuff doesn't come free. So what is the commission cost, Sung?
What is the commission?
What is a commission cost? When you go out to pay your composers, what is
realistic? It can be very wide-ranging. It can be... I think depending on the stature of the composer, if they're a young composer versus someone who's been established and has won every grant under the sun already and have, many works in progress, it's a very different range. And I think it can range anywhere from, let's say, like $1,000 for a piece to like $10,000 for a piece. And it also depends on the scope of the project, right? So if you want a 5-minute piece versus if you want a 20-minute piece, it can be quite varying. And I think typically when groups or individuals or even orchestras, when you go and approach a composer to commission a new piece, there's a bit of a back and forth. I think it can depend on if the composer is really interested in a project versus if there's just another commission that they must fulfill and they have to pay the bills. It can be different, I think. And
in our case, we're really fortunate that the composers love this project, and they're so excited. They're equally excited as we are, and so we've been able to work together to find a commission fee that also that we can support as well.
Yes.
And why? But the other thing too is it's also the community that we build. We definitely rely on support from the community. We're actually a not-for-profit ensemble. And, the more support we get, the more we can do.
Why this piece of art, Mercy?
I may be the wrong person to ask on that, other than it just struck us as being... there's so many themes inside of it, carnival versus Lent, indulgence versus deprivation. And it's such a deep concept to be explored in so many different ways.
We will explore one last piece of music with you today on Backstage Pass. This is Yasha Narveson's piece called Nice Boots. And you're listening to 5x5 on Backstage Pass, live from Studio E. Thank you. Nice Boots. Yasha Narveson wrote it, and 5x5 played it on Classical 91.5. This is Backstage Pass. Now, we have a room full of dedicated teachers in this group here, so let's talk a little bit about teaching and your outreach programs with education. You mentioned, Songmin, that you're going to be working with Strings for Success, a charming program, a lovely program in School 19, if I'm not mistaken.
Yes, I believe that's correct. And we're collaborating with a local composer, Mark Webster, who we've worked with before, very close friend, and also rapper. His name is Glory, I believe. Yeah, and it'll be this interesting collaboration between the string students, our group, Mark Webster, the composer who's writing the music for us, and the rapper Glory.
And this is all coming up in the spring. So when you talk to kids, and because you're big adults, when you talk to kids, how do you take what you're doing as musicians and distill it down into a form that they can really grasp? Marcy?
Well, I think the first thing we have to do is get rid of all of the barriers that we think we should live with. I mean, what is musical genre? What are we doing here in this mixed instrumentation? If we want to work with kids who play trumpet, kids who play flute, kids who play strings, kids who play guitar, I mean, the fewer barriers we have, then the more music we can make together.
What kind of students are you seeing, Hyun, when you are teaching? What kind of students are coming in to learn from you, learn piano with you?
There are all kinds of kids that who want to play piano, but sometimes some kids would like to read music from the score, but some kids like to just listen and just copying what I'm doing and just what they listen to.
So flexibility seems to be what you all as teachers are trying to attain when you go into a classroom.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, to be honest, I mean, it's we're the ones that do the reflex. I find what Marcy said is so true, like breaking down the barriers. With kids, it's actually easier to do that because they just have less of experience of putting barriers up. And so we can go into a school, we can play a modern piece, something that they've never heard before, and sort of challenge like what they think music is. And then we get them playing little snippets, and then before you know it, and before they know it, they're making up their own music, and then they're leaving thinking, wow, we can do this too.
So, Laura, what are we getting right in music in the schools?
Well, when students have those opportunities, and when, to be honest, I think, you know, having us go into the schools that we've gone to, music teachers have been really appreciative of what we're able to pull out of the kids. And I think that when students have the opportunity to, you know, to explore creativity as much as they can, and we like giving those opportunities to students, I think that's when, yeah, that's when things are going right, when they're exploring more than just playing what band piece they're given or what orchestra piece they're given. They're given the room to make up their own music, basically, and use their instruments to do so.
That's right. When teachers get it right, it's when the kids take ownership and music becomes a living art.
Of course, there's a flip side to this question, which is, Songmin, what can we do better for schools?
Well, I think if every kid had an instrument and had lessons and teachers to work with them, obviously the resources are the biggest thing. Because I think ultimately just having the ability to express yourself and, you know, not music is not for everyone, I don't think, in the playing part of it. But even if you, I think, are exposed to it and have an outlet for expressing yourself, whether you're really, really into it and you want to become a professional musician, or you just want to kind of dabble in it and have interest in making some sounds, I think it's really important for all of us to be able to express ourselves.
You are a parent. Is this in the future of your little one?
Well, so with because Hyun has her piano at home and I have all my guitars at home, and Sol always just sees us playing music, and it's amazing. Outside of music, kids are kind of like sponges, and they're like mirrors. Actually, I was talking to someone the other day, and they were saying, they're like a mirror on your soul. And sometimes you see them do things that you do and you kind of cringe. You're like, oh, no, that's what I do. But then it's for the music side of us. Sometimes our daughter, she just picks up she has a little ukulele, and she'll start singing and playing. And we're like, hey, that's kind of like a reflection of what we do, and it's kind of a beautiful thing, right?
It's a beautiful thing. It is a beautiful thing that you all brought into our studio today, so thank you very much for being here. You've been listening to Backstage Pass with 5x5. Our executive producer is Gene Fisher. Our audio technicians are Andrew Croucher and Robert Braden. Many thanks again to 5x5. I'm your producer and host, Julia Figueres. Backstage Pass is a production of WXXI Public Broadcasting.
This is Classical 91.5 and 90.3.